You're listening to a 3CR podcast of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia.
Radio MMT respectfully acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land from which we are broadcasting, the Wurundjeri people, and we are broadcasting to the Kulin nations. Our focus is economics, that is, how stuff is produced and distributed. We recognise that for many tens of thousands of years, First Nations people's connection to country successfully embodied the world's oldest continuous economy, which was catastrophically disrupted by genocide and displacement. We acknowledge that we have much to learn to reshape our current extractive and exploitive system to achieve sustainable prosperity for everyone.
Radio MMT. Economics for the rest of us with Anne
and Kev.
Radio MMT.
Looking at the world through the lens of modern monetary theory.
Radio MMT.
Macroeconomics for a well-being economy.
Macroeconomics? Like, isn't that incredibly boring?
No, Kevin, it's incredibly interesting. It's all about who gets what and why.
Who gets what and why? Okay, I'm in.
Radio MMT at gmail.com.
Incredibly interesting macroeconomics for the rest of us. Welcome to another episode of Radio MMT. How are you this week, Anne?
Hello, Kevin. I'm doing all right. And hello to our lovely listener who I met the other day, Kevin.
You met in person. Larry or Larissa, or was it somebody else?
I was so disappointed it wasn't Larry. No offence to that lovely person I met. But it is a treat when somebody walks up to you and says, I listened to your show.
So it's kind of nice to know that there are people out there listening.
And I have to admit that today, neither of us, Kevin, neither of us are in the studio in Melbourne today. But thanks to the wonders of technology, we are beaming ourselves into the one room.
We are, in fact, in different parts of the world. I'm out travelling, and so we're conglomerating on air.
And so we're going to have a lovely chat today with a fellow named Jim Byrne, who is the host of another podcast about MMT called MMT 101.
Another podcast.
So, Jim, welcome to...
How many MMT podcasts do you reckon there are, Anne?
Are you feeling a bit competitive now, Kevin?
No. I'm just a bit oblivious to because it seems that there's MMT podcasts springing up everywhere, all over the world.
Yeah.
Which is what we're trying to achieve. And so... this Jim Byrne fellow, where's he come from?
Well, let's ask him. Jim, hello.
Hello. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me on. I'll just say about the podcast, it only comes out maybe once a month. Most of the time I'm actually writing about MMT rather than doing the podcast.
And I will mention too that your writing, I believe, is on a Substack. So it's MMT 101 on Substack.
Yeah, that's right. But it's a weekly post about MMT, whatever particular topic I come up with each week.
And you have also recently launched an online course for beginners called MMT 101. The what, why, and how of MMT.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'll link to all of those in the show notes. My first question for you, Jim, apart from that lovely accent, which I have to say sounds a little bit Scottish to me.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I'm from Scotland.
I've got to ask you, Jim, as one podcaster to another, or as one content creator to another, did you have any reservations about using MMT in the name of what you're doing? Because here at Radio MMT, I have had people say to me, you use the MMT word and that kind of silos you into the sort of the economic nutters category.
I probably didn't even think about that, to be honest with you, but I didn't worry about it because I'm a big fan of what's called niching. I wanted to be a niche.
You've got marketing skills by the sounds of it.
Well, I've been running my own business for the last 20-odd years, which was all about accessible web design, which is making sure that disabled people get access to digital content, accessibility auditing for websites and things like that. So when I started my business way back in 2002 or 2003, it was a deliberate policy to really kind of narrow down what I was going to do.
Well, Kevin, we're niche. I didn't know that. Did you know we're niche?
I figured we were niche because that was the reason that when we walk down the street, only one people know who we are.
We're very niche.
I mean, I guess the thing is, you know, you don't know just how or when MMT might strike the news or people's imagination or interest. Hopefully it will.
What I'm interested with what you're doing, Jim, and I've been applying myself to this same thing just recently, is trying to describe MMT in a way that is not for academics, but just for ordinary people. You're not the first, we're not the first. There's been a few people who've tried this, and I think it's good that people do keep on trying it, because there's no point in having all this academic theory if nobody can understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, I think there's lots of people that are always wondering why things are happening the way they are happening, but they're not employed as economists, and they're certainly not academics necessarily, but they have a thirst to know how things work. And obviously the economy is such a huge thing in all of our lives, and the media is pouring out stuff which the three of us wouldn't agree with. So at the point where MMT is, there's still a whole lot of people out there that could be interested in this if it's made accessible to them. So you need to have an on-ramp, essentially,
yeah,
which is what you're doing and is which I'm trying to do. So my kind of approach to it, which is also to do with how I think MMT might grow as a discipline, I don't think it will grow because current economists will suddenly decide that they're interested in it, or academics will suddenly decide that they're interested in it. I think it will only grow from the bottom up. And I have a very kind of simplified view of that model of how it might grow, which is to compare it to any kind of hobby type. So, I don't know, cutlery or teacups or the sorts of things that people get really incredibly enthusiastic about. And communities form around all of these things at various points in their history, explode into the media, and they start making programs about them. So at some point, it kind of becomes fashionable. People start talking about it. And then that's a kind of basis for it spreading. I don't think we're there yet, you know.
I personally don't think you can have too many sources of information about MMT. Only because our formal education institutions do not include MMT as part of their curricula. And I think we should have been learning about this stuff since primary school, because we all live in a monetary system and we don't have any choice. We're born into monetary systems, but then this whole system is just shrouded, you know, in ignorance and in misinformation. So then it comes to the community to have to create the content to sort of teach each other and other people. This is such a strange state for a body of knowledge to be in. And I'm just wondering, how would you explain this state of affairs?
I think it's a problem of gatekeeping, essentially. I spoke to John T. Harvey.
The cowboy economist? The
cowboy economist, exactly. I actually spoke to him about this very topic. Is why is it that within even academic institutions, where you would think that they would like to learn different ideas, they don't do that in economics. They're all stuck on the same neoliberal stroke orthodox economics. For some strange reason, economics is not like other disciplines. It doesn't seem to open itself to other ideas quite so easily. And I think that's just a kind of power thing. If you are already in the in crowd and you've now spent 4 years learning the basics, you've now done a master's degree, you're now a professor or whatever, you've spent 10 years in this discipline, what might have sounded a bit weird and strange the first day you went to the first class is now just part of who you are. And you're not going to easily sweep it aside. You've got the salary, you've got the job, so you're not necessarily that quick to think, okay, 10 years of learning about neoliberal economics, it turns out it's a load of rubbish.
I don't think it's as innocent as that, Jim. I think if you have a look at the history, the neoliberal system favours a ruling class. It's built to make people rich. The neoliberal model is all about maximising one's wealth. And so this kind of like the resistance to change, I don't think it's an innocent thing. And the more I look into it myself, it seems to me that it's more of a counter-revolution to the Keynesian ideas that came in post-World War II. And these capitalists, this ruling class, they're only presenting this very right-wing neoclassical version of economics, and they don't want things to change. They've baked this in.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100% with you, Kev. Surprisingly. and there is a book, it's called The Invisible Doctrine. It's about the neoliberal creed and how that has grown and the huge amount of money that has gone into making it grow. For example, in the UK, they do have these political programs where they invite people on to talk about politics. And they invite quite a lot of what are called research units, which are basically just fronts for particular ideas.
This is the Cato and the IPA and all these right-wing think tanks.
Yeah, research units, think tanks. These are all basically funded by the sort of very wealthy people who see that it's in their interest to keep the status quo. And the broadcasting media, they're kind of all in it to a certain extent. But there's also a class thing here. There's a class thing in the UK, which is that most of the people in broadcasting, or in the arts even, came from the same very narrow kind of class. They went to the same schools, part of the same networks. They get the better jobs, they get the better pays. So again, it's the same idea. You've got to protect what they've got. An MMT, which is saying, wait a minute, that's not how it works actually in practice. And if you understand this stuff, you know, as we know, inequality has been growing enormously since the late 1970s, early 80s. And if somebody comes along and says, actually, we're not running out of money, the government's got plenty of money, they make the damn stuff, then we can have a much more equal society. We can have free education for all, for their entire life. You know, we can have a well-being economy. It's not about the money. Somebody comes along like yourselves or me and says that and say, oh, wait a minute. So as you say, there is a political element to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. When people say, well, if this is true, what MMT says, things like that the currency issuing governments can't run out of their own currency, why haven't I heard this before? There's your answer.
Exactly.
And I'll be interested to see how you feel about this, but the entry point for a discussion about MMT, and this actually happened to me on the weekend. I ran into a bunch of guys on the coast here. They invited me back to their place for a beer afterwards. And, of course, I had a couple of beers and started talking about economics, which is a tragic mistake. But how do you launch the conversation? And I was speaking to a guy there who was actually a bond trader. That was his job. And it occurs to me that if you're going to try and talk about MMT, you have to start at the beginning. And the beginning has to be about what is money? Where does money come from? Would that be a logical starting point for you?
Probably not for me. I think for a lot of people that sounds quite esoteric. Strangely enough, despite the fact you're in a pub and you're paying for your beer with money,
yeah,
I think a lot of people would still find it quite hard to get their head around it because they think they know where money comes from. It comes from their employer.
Yeah, the conversation I was having with this guy who was a bond trader, he'd actually fallen asleep. Well, I thought he was asleep, but he had his eyes closed, and I was talking to somebody else. And I said, well, bonds have got nothing to do with government debt. Bonds are a whole different thing. Yeah. And he woke up and he said, hang on, I'm a bond trader and I know all about this. And I said, hang on, but you explained to me how bonds pay for government spending when we had this conversation before, saying that the government creates money. Why do your bonds need to fund government? And I said, look, I understand that you've been doing this for decades, and I'm not trying to say that I know anything near as much about bond trading as you do. All I was trying to explain to him was that bonds have got nothing to do with government debt because the government creates its own currency. And his reply was, all I know is my bond trading part of it. I don't really understand the origins of money. And I said, well, this is the problem. Nothing came of the conversation, but they were kind of interested.
No, it's interesting you say that because I'm actually going to speak to a bond trader in one of my podcasts. And one of the things I'm interested about people who are kind of working at the sort of coal face of finance is I would expect that they know how it works. And strangely enough, that is not always the case. I mean, if you've read Warren Mosler's book, where he describes going to Italy, who looked like they were, as a country, were going to go bankrupt. In his head, he's saying, that's not possible.
Yeah.
Italy make their own currency. So he's thinking.
That was before the euro.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. So his firm thought, well, we can make a killing from this because clearly Italy's not going to go bankrupt. The value of the country's bonds have collapsed. We could buy them cheaply, but he went to visit the appropriate people within the government that dealt with all this, and had a chat with them, and they kind of realised that what he was saying was correct. So suddenly the crisis was kind of over, like 10 minutes after Warren walked into the room. But he was also saying, okay, well, we phone call back to the office, buy Italian bonds.
he made a few quid out of that. He did all right.
So I think a lot of bond traders know the situation, but his own part of that story is also about his colleagues within the office not understanding that.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they're on the sort of cold face of finance.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM on digital and on the internet, www.3cr.org.au.
Jim, I got a sense when you mentioned equity earlier about what's inspiring you to be so prolific in creating all this MMT content. But is there anything more to the Jim Byrne MMT story?
I suppose I'm 63, so there comes a point in your life when you think, okay, I'm not going to continue doing things that I'm not that enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy learning about MMT, and I enjoy kind of teaching, talking to people about it. The other thing I would say is that I've always been interested in equality.
Mm.
I spent, you know, the last 20-odd years trying to make sure that disabled people get their equal access to resources and to services, etc. And I've always been interested in politics. Way back when I was a teenager, I was a member of the Labour Party. You wouldn't recognise it from the Labour Party today. So that's all in the mix. And I like making things. And I'm a musician, so I spent a long time being a songwriter and a performer on my own course. All the music you will find in the course that I wrote and recorded and played, and anything that you hear on there that happens to be music.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I grew up in a kind of working class town, you know, quite a poor area. So you see a lot of people struggling. I think there's really no need for this. You know, I'm not saying back then I understood anything about economics. I didn't. But you can see that things were not right, and there's a lot of inequality.
And if you have a sense of fairness and you have a social conscience, then the economy that you're involved in is how you describe it. It's like you see these unnecessary inequalities and you start to wonder, well, how does this happen? Why is it like this?
Exactly. I mean, we are wasting people's talents. If you're not educating people, which unfortunately in a lot of countries, you need to have money to get an education.
Yeah.
If you're not making the best of people's skills and talents, you're not making the best of your country and your economy. It's kind of counterproductive. Inequality and poverty is all counterproductive.
Mm, we could be funding universal education.
Absolutely should be. I mean, I live in Scotland, and luckily for us, we have now got a devolved government. I'm not happy with that. I want independence. But our devolved government believes that everybody should have free further education.
Oh, that's good.
Down the road in England, they don't have that.
Yeah.
So free education for all is something that I have been a product of. You know, I went to university from quite a working class area. A lot of people weren't that lucky. Back then, we didn't have free, you know, it wasn't the same. I got a grant, so that was good.
We had free university education for quite some time, but we gave it away, Jim, for some strange reason. The Labor government brought it in, and then the Labor government said we had to start paying for it for some unknown reason.
Well, again, that could be a political decision, of course, because the higher your education level, the more left-wing you tend to move. The lower your education level, the more right-wing you tend to move. So it could be a deliberate policy not to educate the population. I'm not saying it is. But it could be a tactic.
It's a useful coincidence for some people.
It could be a useful coincidence, yeah.
You You're with Anne and Kev on Radio MMT.
At 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia.
And wherever you get your podcasts.
Economics for the rest of us.
Well, as he mentioned, Jim Burns is also a musician. Here's Satisfied Mind by Jim Burns.
How many times have you heard someone say, if I had his money, I'd do things my way. But little do they know that it's so hard to find one rich man in ten with a satisfied mind.
You are with Radio MMT, and Kev and I, we are speaking with Jim Burns, who is over there in Scotland, talking about all things MMT. You just mentioned the issue of Scotland wanting independence, which I've heard a bit of talk about. I was wondering, actually, if MMT informs your view on this.
I wasn't necessarily at that point influenced by MMT, because that's when I kind of first started to learn about MMT. That's actually where my interest started, was the referendum and all the talk around about the economy. And it was my interest in independence and the economy of Scotland and the vote that we were having, which I was regarding as probably the most important vote I was going to have in my life. So I needed to learn about the economy. And the things I found at the time absolutely shocked me to my core, just about the relationship between Scotland and England, the fact that Westminster, of course, controls all of our major economic levers, and Scotland basically, you know, we're not a currency issuer. As a devolved nation at the moment, we are a currency user. And I'll give you an example of how that might impact a country like Scotland. During the COVID, which everybody in the world experienced, our First Minister wanted to shut down the country earlier because of all the evidence related to saving lives. We were not allowed to do that, of course, because we don't control the purse. Mm. In order to shut down the country, you've got to then provide support for all the businesses. And Westminster decided they didn't want to do that. They would only allow us to do it when they decide. There has been some research done into that. I can't remember the figures, but quite a lot of people lost their lives as a result of that particular decision. Westminster really doesn't care a jot about Scotland, because, of course, Westminster is totally dominated by English MPs, and quite rightly they are interested in their own priorities. It kind of demonstrates where we are as a nation. We don't have the power to do the things we want to do. Mm. In Scotland, people pay taxes like they do everywhere else, but I think it was something like 66 of that. Those taxes are held back by Westminster. So Scotland gets a portion of what they pay to run the country, something like 30-odd percent. And to me, discovering these things for the first time, I just found it incredibly shocking.
Yeah, that's a pretty horrible funding formula. So effectively, Scotland is a little bit like, say, Queensland or New South Wales in Australia, where they're not currency issuers, so they are governments that have to either borrow or tax in order to spend.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's what we call not having monetary sovereignty.
Exactly. Scotland doesn't have monetary sovereignty.
And yet, in my in-depth research on Wikipedia, I did notice that when the UK left the European Union, a majority of voters in Scotland actually voted to remain in the EU.
Yeah, that's correct. Every single area of Scotland voted against leaving the EU. We know there was no area in Scotland that voted for it, yet we got yanked out of the EU.
So if you're understanding, say, that, as you say, Westminster is controlling the purse, why would you want to be part of the European Union where also you would not have monetary sovereignty?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I didn't know anything about that back then. You know, I didn't know enough to be able to say what you've just said. However, that is not the full picture, of course, because we are already, as a nation, in the same situation with the UK, but we're in a worse situation with the UK. Mm-hmm. Although I'm not saying that we want to have our currency sovereignty taken away from us in order to be in the EU. However, in the situation we were in, Scotland got a lot from being in the European Union, including a lot of financial help. And the actual kind of cultural approach to things, Scotland is much more aligned with the EU than it is with England as a country. So there's lots of connections between Scotland and Europe, lots of cultural things that we can relate to and they can relate to with us. So it's not just about the money. You know, we're sort of saying, all right, okay, the EU and the UK are equivalent when it comes to money and sovereignty. They're not. The UK is definitely a worse situation to be in.
The other thing with Brexit was that the impression that I got, it was quite an anti-immigration push by the right.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can understand that a movement that's being led by right-wing, you know, racists is something that the Scots mightn't particularly embrace.
Yeah. If I had been, you know, up on the MMT stuff during the referendum, perhaps I would be saying some of these things as part of the story. But that does not mean that I would necessarily vote for Brexit. Even knowing these things, I wouldn't necessarily do that.
Interesting.
I think it's good to have partners, you know, the kind of Nordic countries, which are, again, very close to Scotland and have similar attitudes and similar culture in all sorts of ways. We need partners. But that does not necessarily mean we need to have the euro.
Okay.
Part of the propaganda about the euro in Scotland is people say, oh, well, you would have to have the euro, which is not the case. Did the UK have the euro?
No.
No. Was the UK in the European Union? Yes.
Yes.
There are many, many countries that are in the European Union and do not use the euro.
Right.
There is no rule other than a kind of a promise, which is an empty promise, that you will eventually, when everybody knows that they're never going to do that. So we can't necessarily argue that this is about taking on somebody else's currency. That is not the argument necessarily. There's lots of other levels of argument and reasons that you might want to have partners, economic partners and political partners. I mean, look at all the wars that are going on at the moment. Do we want to be standing alone as an independent country? No, we want to have lots of partners.
Mm.
And that's part of that thinking.
So, Jim, making an online course, I imagine it's quite a lot of work.
Yeah, there's 9 hours of video on the course. Some of those are interviews. I was wanting to make sure that it wasn't just another academic dry course about economics. So if you've had a look at any of the course, you'll see that it's quite relaxed. There's quite a lot of stuff to look at, and I try to avoid as much jargon as possible.
So who is your audience?
Well, I suppose the audience is people who are interested in economics but are not necessarily academics. And they definitely won't find out about it from the media, you know, or from the economists that are on the television or on the radio or in the newspapers. They won't find out about it from that. So those are the folk that might think, okay, what is MMT? They type into Google, I've heard about it. People are talking about it. What is it? And, you know, my course hopefully will come up. So if they're interested in it, they'll come across my course. So it's kind of beginners and even folk that have got some sense of what MMT is, I think would get a lot from the course. Some of the subjects, you could say, are advanced subjects, but I'm trying to put them across in a way that is understandable without masses of jargon. I mean, I talk about sovereignty at one point, and everybody's got their own definition of what they think that word means. So look at things like food sovereignty, I look at obviously financial sovereignty, personal sovereignty. There's lots of different ways of using that word. It's just really about power over over something.
Sovereignty is not properly understood by a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, most of the people probably think of it as political sovereignty, power over your own lands, that sort of thing. And that's actually been a useful thing to do. I don't do that many talks, but I've done some about MMT. And you have to be incredibly careful when you're talking about MMT because sometimes the first thing you say is going to alienate the entire audience. And the first thing you say might be something along the lines of the UK government makes its own money. That's the end of the conversations. Mm. You'll lose the audience straight away. So I used the idea of sovereignty in the last talk I did because it was in Scotland and people are very interested in political sovereignty. And I use it in terms of control.
Mm.
And eventually, of course, I could get to the control over your own money, the issuance of your own currency. And by that time, people had bought into the whole idea. You know that the UK issues the pound. You know that the US issues the dollar. And everybody's nodding their head. So anything I say after that, it all seems damn obvious.
It's like you're appealing to a Team Scotland and this is our identity. You've got the hook, and then you can start explaining economics to them.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'd been told by the person organising it, The person who organised it was an MMT person, and they knew the pitfalls. You know, make sure you don't do this right away, and it's going to be trouble. They're just turned off.
Interesting. Yeah.
So they were adamant, you know, make sure you come up with some way of doing it. Made me think, obviously, what's the best way of approaching this? But to answer your question, Anne, I've organised the course into three sections. It's the why of MMT, the what of MMT, and the how of MMT. So the why is, why do we need a new way of thinking about money in the economy? So basically, I'm looking at things like global warming, and I'm looking at all the things that politicians say about why they can't do things in terms of solving the issues of global warming, which are all about black holes and finance and how we don't have any money and all that kind of stuff. So that's part of the why. I look at inequality. I look at the results of austerity, for example. In the UK, for the last 15 years, we've had austerity.
Can you explain what austerity is as far as doing jargon? Let's unpack austerity a bit.
Well, basically what it's doing is it's taking money out of the private sector. There's less money flowing around in the private sector, and people are losing jobs, perhaps. They are having to take on loans in order to pay their bills. The services are not getting the money that they need, so the health services are going down. We have an NHS in the UK, and it's completely crippled by the fact it's not getting funded. The government thinks that the country's in debt, right? And we've got to cut back, and that's austerity.
Austerity is spending less, yeah.
The government want to spend less money into the private sector because they think, oh, we're in debt. Oh, goodness me, we better not spend so much money, because they think government is just like a household or a business.
Mm.
You've got to bring the money in before you can spend it. In terms of the government, they think bringing the money in is taxes and any other income they can get.
Mm.
So they bring in the tax money and think, all right, we've got a certain amount of money. Make sure you don't spend more than that amount of money.
It's a great mindset, isn't it, for tying the hands of a government?
Like, exactly.
One of the main functions of a government is to spend the money.
Yeah, exactly. So they're not spending the money.
There's a question I like to ask, and this comes back to the conversation earlier about where does money come from? And so people say, oh, the money for the government comes from the taxpayer. And then I just ask the simple question, well, where do they get it from?
Yeah, absolutely.
People have a lot of trouble with that answer.
That story is so illogical once you start looking at it. And yet I would find it impossible to explain it to somebody in a pub.
Yeah.
Because the idea of the government having to get your taxes is so ingrained.
Yeah.
It's on your telly every single day. It's just assumed in every political debate. It's so ingrained in the person's sort of view of how things work. It's almost impossible to make them think of anything else. Obviously, the government gets the money from us. We give them the money to spend.
Yeah.
How could it work any other way?
And before I understood MMT, I used to say, I don't mind paying my taxes because it's going to education, because it's going to health, because it's going to all these good things. That's an emotional thing to do.
Yeah.
People have to justify it to themselves emotionally. And then for people to find out that what they've been told is not true.
Well, that's right. If you can get somebody to even address that, they will always have more questions. You know, like, so why am I paying taxes? Surely we shouldn't be paying taxes.
Mm.
So then, of course, you've got to go on another journey with them. Well, taxes validate the currency.
Yeah.
Taxes can help with inequality. Taxes can be used to stop people, you know, doing certain things.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a story behind all these things, but it's a long journey for any particular person that you happen to be speaking to in a cafe or a pub.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM on digital and on the internet, www.3cr.org.au.
So we were talking about the why people should bother even learning about it, and it is so that we can understand that we don't have to worry about the money or the financing when it comes to climate change, or we can undo some of the horrors of austerity. What's the how in your course then?
The resources aspect, which is, you know, we can't spend money unless it's things to spend the money on.
Mm.
You can't buy something unless it's for sale in your currency. So when we know that the finances are not the thing that's restricting our ability to get to the well-being economy, the economy where we're not burning up the planet, we know that we can actually increase resources by spending money. That's one of the things that I say to people that seems to get lost in economics.
Say that again.
You can spend money to create resources.
Right.
So, for example, you could say, okay, well, there aren't enough plumbers, or there aren't enough bricklayers, or there aren't enough teachers for this wonderful world that you're talking about. And say, well, is it possible to teach brickies? Is it possible to teach people to become teachers? Is it possible to teach people the ins and outs of renewable energy? Of course it is. Mm. How do you do that? Well, you spend money in education.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of idea of understanding that resources are scarce, but certain resources can also be grown by spending money. So, for example, I don't know if you know Fidel Kabu.
An MMT economist.
I'm a big fan of, who's interested in sort of like African countries that were former colonies and how they're still basically, they're still run by their colonists to a large extent because of the...
Exploited is the word you're after.
They're still exploited, exactly. So he's interested in the whole thing about control of resources as well. So a lot of these countries don't actually have control of their own energy. They don't have control of their own food. They don't have control of all sorts of things which are kind of vital to the country.
That's that word sovereignty again, isn't it? Food sovereignty.
Yeah, exactly. Sovereignty. They don't have monetary sovereignty. So, for example, if you understand MMT and you understand that having not just your own currency, but control of that currency is the important thing. So you might not have control of that country at the moment because you have huge debts, huge historic debts, for example, US dollar debts. And in order to pay those debts, you've got to bring in US dollars.
Mm.
How do you bring in US dollars? Well, you could have a big tourism industry,
mm-hmm.
which is a kind of drain in your economy because all those people could be doing something else more productive.
And the tourists come in and eat your food.
Yeah, so Fidel will look at that and say, okay, if the reason you've got these huge debts is because you're buying in energy from another country, it's time you started developing your own energy resources. If the reason that you are in this dire strait having to pay these debts is because you're having to import food to feed your citizens, maybe it's time for you to start growing food. How do we do that? Well, we invest in the things that are vital to the country.
Mm-hmm.
We invest in our own renewable energy. We invest in our own food. I mean, the other huge thing in this is knowledge. The reason that these countries have to buy in technology and knowledge is because they don't have an education system that produces folk that understand how to make things like computers or whatever. You'll find a lot of the time that the countries that are apparently making computers are actually only assembling them. All the knowledge is coming from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things, you could say, okay, we're going to put our own currency into that. We can now educate our population. We're going to put our own currency into making sure we've got our own energy. We're going to put our own currency into making sure we've got our own food so that we can work towards having financial sovereignty.
I sometimes wonder if China was listening to some MMT economists whispering in their ear because they seem to have gone down this path.
That's right. They did it, and they probably did it. They weren't that worried about people's ownership of IP, for instance, or for somebody from China listening. I'm not saying that. Don't worry. I'm not an enemy of people. I'm a fan of China. Yeah, so you're right.
Yeah.
They have built their own infrastructure. They have spent money to build their own infrastructure. And that's another area where you want to spend your money in.
Mm.
So understanding MMT empowers you to understand what's happening and gives you solutions. I mean, Scotland is overflowing with energy resources. Scotland is overflowing with food, but the Scottish government doesn't have control of any of these things.
What's the energy resources you've got there? Is it wind?
We've got huge wind power. We've got huge water power. We've got huge amounts of water. Obviously, you'll hear that the rain is, you know, we get a lot of rain in Scotland. We're well known for it.
An abundance.
We don't necessarily get a huge amount of sun, but we have huge amounts of wind power.
Hmm.
We are already and have been for a number of years totally self-sufficient in renewable energy. But we have unfortunately, because of the situation we're in, we have the highest energy bills in Europe.
Crazy.
That's a good word. Crazy. And you wonder why somebody like me is an independent supporter. We have no control over that. We are basically getting exploited. And these rules could be changed by Westminster government, but they have no necessarily any interest in changing these rules. Because, of course, you know, the folk that are lobbying them every day, the people that are actually making the money from this price gouging, and they're quite happy with that. So, you know, there's all sorts of things that you can see that would be quite useful, not only to be financially sovereign and independent, but understanding the lay of the land, which is what MMT is about at the end of the day, is understanding how things work. Hugely empower you.
Well, that sounds like a great note to end on there, Jim. So all power to you and to the Scotland's independence movement. And thank you so much for sharing some of those really interesting viewpoints from the other hemisphere.
No, thanks for inviting me on. I know I start getting excited at the end there as I start ranting.
No. You're speaking the same language, Jim. There's no doubt about it. But I can understand your frustration. You can just feel it. Lacking that that ability to control what you've got.
Yeah.
I've got... what's his name? Wallace. I've got visions of Braveheart, you know, burying his ass to the English. But there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I like English people and I like England. That is not what I'm saying. You know, they're great people, and I want to be friends with them, not lorded over by them. I want to be equal friends.
It's just the ruling class that you might have an issue with.
The system.
Exactly.
Alrighty, we've got to get out of here.
Okay. Great speaking to you, Jim.
Thanks for inviting me. I'll see you later.
So anyway, Anne, it was great speaking to Jim. Mm. He is a kindred spirit. There's no doubt about it. I was feeling many, many similarities. but we've got to go. We've got Mafalda's coming up next. So we'll see you again in a couple of weeks.
See you then, Kevin. You've been listening to Radio MMT with Anne and Kev.
We'd love your feedback. Email us on radiommt@gmail.com. or search Radio MMT on social media.
Listen to this show anytime, wherever you get your podcasts, or on 3cr.org.au/Radio MMT.
Support this show and the station by subscribing to 3cr.org.au and mention Radio MMT.
We thank all our guests.
And we thank economist Professor Bill Mitchell and his MMTed.org. Educating the masses on modern monetary theory.
And thank you to our listening listeners for listening. And I thank you, Kevin.
And I thank you, Anne. So what's planned for next week?
Kevin, there is still so much to talk about. We've got to expose all this rotten economics.
Well, yeah, no, that's good, and I get it. Do you reckon we could use a bit more music?
Well, I made a list of all these terrible economic theories. Like, have you heard of the theory of comparative advantage, or the quantity theory of money, or the loanable funds theory?
Have you heard of a band called Single Gun Theory? Like, they're a really good band. I'm sure there's a whole range of, like, macroeconomic music that I could bring into the show.
Yeah, but we really need to do marginal productivity theory, not to mention the natural rate of unemployment and the money multiplier.
You've got a pretty good singing voice. I play bass. Bill, he plays guitar. I reckon we could form a macroeconomic band. Like, we could deliver this whole message by music.
Well, we could call the band the Permanent Income Hypothesis, or the Ricardian Equivalence, or Rational Expectations.
I think we're onto something here. We're trying to make macroeconomics more interesting to the masses. We're going to, like, form this band and sing it to them. And we're going to bring the economists in. We're going to get musical.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.